It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. Georgia is set to break an unusual record tonight with the planned execution of Stephen Frederick Spears. Spears is on death row for the 2001 murder of his ex-girlfriend in Dahlonega. And if he's put to death this evening as scheduled, Georgia will top Texas for the most calendar year executions in 2016. Georgia was actually pretty influential over modern public opinion on the death penalty. That's the story told in a forthcoming documentary about the case of Jerome Bowden. Bowden was executed 30 years ago after 10 years on death row for murder, but his conviction remains a mystery. Georgia officials say many of the details of his case are confidential state secrets. That includes a court-appointed IQ test that apparently found Bowden to be intellectually disabled. Paula Kaplan is a psychologist and an associate at Harvard University's Du Bois Institute. Paula is also a producer of the film American Justice: The Jerome Bowden Story. It uses reenactments of real-life events to illustrate how the court reached a guilty verdict in Jerome Bowden's case. Paula joined me recently to talk about the case along with Atlanta Journal-Constitution reporter Alan Judd. I asked Alan whether or not this case was as controversial 30 years ago as it's considered today.
At the time, there was a lot of controversy about it because of the fact that the state was executing someone with a very low IQ who apparently had some form of what was at the time referred to, of course, as mental retardation. We would now say intellectual disability. But yes, there was a good bit of controversy at the time because people thought, people wondered if he knew what he had done, if he knew the consequences of that, if he understood the punishment. And that was really the issue.
Let's hear a little bit of that documentary. This scene is a reenactment of a conversation between attorney Samuel Oates and one of the officers who arrested Jerome Bowden.
I gave him a waiver of rights form, which he read for himself aloud in my presence, along with Sergeant Hardaway and Detective Miles, indicating he understood his rights. And then he signed it in my presence.
You say he read it to you?
Yes, sir. He read it aloud.
He had no difficulty reading it?
No, sir. He understood it. He read it.
I didn't ask you if he understood it. He read?
Yes, sir.
Why, Paula, is that point, whether he read his waiver of rights form or not? Why is that important?
Well, it's crucial because there was no material evidence tying Jerome Bowden to the crime. There was material evidence tying someone else to the crime. The only quote-unquote evidence of his guilt was what was presented in court as a confession that he had signed. Now, he had tested as having an IQ of only 59 when he was 14 years old. He had been in special ed in Columbus, Georgia's first special ed class when he was in first grade and all the way through. And so it was clear that he had what was called mental retardation. That made him extremely vulnerable to being persuaded to sign a false confession. And if he couldn't even read what he was asked to sign, then that confession should not even have been used. And furthermore, what we discovered in doing the research for our film is that he didn't sign just one confession. It turns out that this did not come out in the trial, but he signed not just one confession, but three different confessions at different times. And if you look at those confessions, they contradict each other and they contradict what the police found as evidence. And so it is quite likely that he either had nothing to do with the crime or was certainly not the major player in it.
So let's hear a little bit more from the documentary. This is a clip of Jerome testifying during his trial.
I told Detective Miles that I had killed Ms. Stryker and that I had stabbed her with a butcher knife and that I took jewelry and stuff from the house, stuff like this.
Jerome, did you in fact kill Mr. Stryker?
No, I didn't.
How in the world did you think it was going to help you to confess to a crime that you now say you didn't do?
Well, I don't know. Only thing I knew, since Detective Miles had told me this here.
He told you what?
Had told me about could help me, that he could.
So, Alan, in the years since, why have we not been able to go and see more of this documentation? Why does the state still consider this to be state secrets?
The State Board of Pardons and Paroles has since the beginning, since it was set up about 60, 65 years ago, has had a pretty much total exemption to any kind of public records and public meetings law requirements. They can meet in private, they deliberate in private, they discuss in private, and all their records are private. They have the opportunity to declassify them if they choose to. And there are a number of reasons that they say they could, including historical accuracy of past events, which would seem to apply here. But they chose not to do so, and they almost never do.
We've talked about this before on the show, but how different is this from standard practice in other states?
A lot of states have a lot more openness. One of the ironies is that the parole board here was set up because of a scandal in which it appeared that the governor at the time maybe had sold some pardons. So then they set up a new board to be more, less corrupt, essentially. And it's all done in secret.
I guess transparency was not part of the less corruption then. So then, Paula, why are we still looking at this? Why is it still important today? We will get back to Jerome's story, but why does this still interest us now?
Well, it interests us now because I need to explain a little bit about this case. It was a history-making case. When in 2002 the U.S. Supreme Court said it is unconstitutional to execute people with, they use the term mental retardation, Justice Stevens named the Jerome Bowden case as pivotal in that decision because after he was executed, when it came out that he clearly had mental retardation, then the Georgia legislature became the first state in the country to outlaw execution of people with these low IQs. Now, here's what happened. When the Georgia Board of Pardons and Paroles was contacted by Jerome's final appeals lawyer, and they were told Jerome has mental retardation, and it was the executive director of the Association of Retarded Citizens of Georgia at the time who talked to the board, they lifted the stay of execution, and they could have and should have said at that time, well, we can't execute him because, look, since he was 14 years old, it's been known that he had an IQ of 59. But because the board makes its own rules and is beholden to no one, as far as I can tell, what they did was they said, we'll issue a stay of execution, but we're going to bring in our own psychologist to test him. Now, there was no reason to do that. They brought in a psychologist who was on the payroll of the prison system, as I understand it, and he did another IQ test, which they will not let us see. And then what happened was that psychologist made a report to the board. The board then came out of the meeting and they spoke freely to the press. And I'll tell you in a second why that is crucial. And they said, well, Dr. Knopf explained to us that Jerome has an IQ of 71. That put him just over the cutoff point of 70.
Right, the cutty is 70 or below.
That's right. Now, it turns out that was not true. His full-scale IQ, which is the IQ number you're supposed to go by, was actually below 70. The 71 was for one part of the IQ test. Now, we know from what the board chair at the time and other members of the board said to the press, we know that there were real problems with that psychologist's report. We've been asking since 2008 at a number of different times and through different people and directly just to see the test forms and the psychologist's report, if he wrote one, or an audio report, if his report to the board was recorded, because we want to have historical accuracy in our film, and that is in the public interest. And the lawyer for the board in 2008 said, if it's in the interest of historical accuracy, then we will release the information. So we explained that it was. We said, we got bits and pieces from what your board said to the press, but we need to see the whole picture. I'm a psychologist. I know that when you're giving an IQ test and you ask certain questions, you have to decide, is that worth 2 points, 1 point, or 0 points? I want to know how Dr. Knopf scored that test. I want it to be clear. We want to have a picture in the film of what his real IQ was, which was below 70. And here's why this matters. It matters desperately because as recently as a few weeks ago, the board again refused to divulge that information. They claim it's because of confidentiality. Yeah. Now, if there ever was any confidentiality, the board clearly waived that when they came out and spoke freely to the press. So what we have on the public record are the fragments of the whole picture. That is not in the interest of historical accuracy. Jerome is dead. His two closest sisters are dead. One of them had written to the board and asked that the information be given to us. And this is a First Amendment issue. And the public has the right to have that information.
If you're just joining us, my guests are psychologist Paula Kaplan and AJC reporter Alan Judd. We're talking about Georgia's execution of Jerome Bowden in the 1980s and the questions that still remain. Alan, Paula mentioned that Georgia became one of the first state, in fact, to bar executions of people with an IQ of 70 below. But one of the things that you report on, in fact, is that in this state, they have the highest standard of proof for that designation. What does that mean?
Right. Well, look, a little background of that is that the 2002 Supreme Court case that Paula was mentioning basically said it's against the law to execute people with mental retardation. However, it's up to each state to determine whether that person falls in that category and using their own standards. So Georgia has this very high standard of clear and convincing evidence, I believe it's called. And it's much higher than most states. Most states would go with a preponderance of evidence, but Georgia has a standard that is very, very difficult to meet. And it's not just based on the IQ alone. It is based on the IQ and some other factors that aren't necessarily laid out for the public.
And are also quite different from other states.
Correct.
Let me just say something. This is important today. This is not just about a historical case from all those years ago. And the reason it's important today is that a lot of people think that because of the 2002 Supreme Court decision, Atkins v. Virginia, that nobody in this country is executing anyone who has this intellectual disability anymore. That's not true. And what's absolutely horrifying is that they are still managing to execute people with these low IQs in the same way that they did it to Jerome Bowden, which is that the state's attorneys, in this case, it was the Georgia Board of Pardons and Paroles, but this the people who want to see someone executed, they bring in these hired gun psychologists. And as I mentioned, as a psychologist, there are things you can do that
to make skew the results.
Exactly. And so we need to know it's happening today, despite that decision.
Alan, this came up again just last year. So tell me about the execution of Warren Lee Hill.
Right. Hill had he was on death row for beating to death another inmate, and he was already in prison. He killed a cellmate. He had an IQ of 70.
Which is the cutoff point. It's supposed to be 70 or below.
Right. So despite that, the Board of Pardons and Paroles had a hearing in private. We don't know what was said. We don't know what information they had or what they based it on, but they declined to grant him clemency. So the execution was carried out last year.
How is it legal, though, if the cutoff is 70 or below for I know we don't know why, but how is it legal for them to go ahead and move forward with the execution anyway?
The cutoff really is not a legal standard. That is a sort of a standard that's used by the profession, I believe, to look at intellectual disabilities. But the Supreme Court ruling in 2002 didn't lay out exactly what the standards would be. It's up to each state.
So, Paula, why do we have that particular standard of 70 or below? How did that guideline get established?
Briefly, if you look at the statistics, that means that someone is not just not all that intelligent, but significantly below average in intelligence. It's a statistical cutoff point. But two things to mention. One is that when you say someone has an IQ of 70, it's just like when you hear the election polls. That doesn't mean it's 70. It means it's somewhere between, say, 68 and 72. So this is not absolute science. The other thing is that according to the official definitions of what was called mental retardation, now intellectual disability, you don't just go on the basis of the IQ. And this is where psychologists who are hired guns can fudge things, because you're supposed to take other things into consideration, including how do they cope in everyday life activities. And that's often a matter of judgment. Which ones do you report? Which ones do you evaluate? And supposedly, they're supposed to have had a low IQ before the age of 18. Well, if someone gets a serious head injury and their IQ is now below 70, then do we really want to say, well, they used to be able to think clearly and function well and understand what execution means and understand the consequences of their actions, and now they can't? Well, too bad, they were able to do it before they committed the crime. What is it that we're doing to people here? This is about revenge and vengefulness. It's not about understanding what leads somebody to commit a crime or to sign a false confession.
So, Alan, where do we go from here? Because is there a possibility that anybody at any point could compel the clemency board to release documents like this if they were in search of perhaps a legal precedent?
It is totally up to them. They have total discretion about this. There's no accountability for the parole board. Even though the governor appoints them, the governor has no authority to instruct them on how to do anything. Once they are there, they are autonomous.
And not even the governor can demand to see the transcripts or the proceedings.
No.
There's no democracy. There's no democratic procedure here. They're interfering with the First Amendment, and they're getting away with it. This is shocking.
Well, the documentary is called American Justice, The Jerome Bowden, a story. I've been speaking with Paula Kaplan, who's an associate at Harvard University's Du Bois Institute and was a producer on that film. And Alan Judd is a reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Georgia has another execution planned tonight. Stephen Frederick Spears is scheduled to be put to death for the murder of Sherry Holland in 2001. That would make Georgia the state with the most executions this calendar year. Coming up, a self-described liberal redneck advocates for the rural South. This is On Second Thought.